The podcast you're about to listen to was taken from one of our live programs. If you don't already listen to Radio Maria Live, you can do so on DAB in selected regions of the United Kingdom, or by downloading the app. Just search for Radio Maria Play. All the Radio Maria podcasts are conveniently stored on this app. We'd like to thank all our listeners who support us with monthly donations, so that we can continue to be a Christian voice by your side. To find out more about becoming a monthly supporter, visit www.radiomariaengland.uk.
I'm Di Redmond, and I'm your host for today's Songs in the Wilderness. In this programme, we listen to the songs that have influenced our guests throughout their life and have influenced their faith too. Today I have the pleasure of talking to Surendra Paul. Surendra Paul, a medical doctor originally from Sri Lanka, now living in Cambridgeshire. Nice to have you on the programme.
Thank you, Di. Thank you very much for having me. And it's a pleasure to be on Radio Maria. I look forward to with the radio station.
It's a pleasure for us to have you here. And I'm sorry we dragged you out of bed so early to drive all the way from Huntingdon. I think it was quite cold this morning to start with.
It was, yes.
Yes. So you were born into a medical family, your father a Protestant and your mother a Catholic. Did their different churches have any effect on your upbringing?
It's rather complicated because my mother was a practicing Catholic, and my dad, though he came from a Protestant family, at that stage of his life, he was very anti-Christian, anti-God. But he didn't really put any obstacles in the way, and I was allowed to be baptized and receive Holy Communion and so on.
But so it's your mother's faith that obviously influenced your upbringing.
That's right. Yes, that was the active.
Bit. So your mother was born in India and she was a Catholic.
That's right. She came from Bombay, and her family were had a railway background. Her father was was a station master in Bandra, which I understand is a residential area in Bombay. And all the members of her family worked on the railway. I remember one of her brothers was a foreman and actually built these steam engines.
Goodness.
And I did meet him before, you know, when I was a child. And there was another who was a guard, rose up through the ranks, and that's quite a high appointment. But in the past, they had, on her mother's side, a connection with the last emperor of India, Chhatrapati Shivaji Bhosle. So that's a kind of mythic connection that we have. And I suppose after they lost the wars, the Maratha wars, in which the Duke of Wellington, I've just been visiting his last resting place in Kent at Walmer Castle. They then probably found employment on the railways that were being developed by the British at that time.
So who you've just been visiting the grave of the Duke of Wellington?
That's right.
He was linked to your family?
Well, I've had an interest. My original hero was Napoleon, but then someone pointed out, why do you follow Napoleon?
You're going for
and,
the epic.
And I looked into to Wellington, and I was very taken up with him. Mm. And he has links with King's College London, to which our family has a long connection.
Oh, I see.
I find, Di, that my life is one of circularity. I always keep coming back to things. So I just happened to be visiting my son's family. And I suggest a trip out to Walmer to see the castle. I was quite keen to see that. And it was a wonderful day, lovely weather. And we got in free as well, because it was Members' Day.
Oh, good for you. Well done. So did you enjoy your school and your early life, family life? And were you keen to study? Because it sounds like your family were pretty
Yes, they are actually, we come from an academic, a professional and academic family, several generations of doctors and surgeons. I'm, in fact, a third generation surgeon. My father was a surgeon, his father was a surgeon. And the others were not medical, but lawyers and other academics in subjects like botany and so forth. So it was an academic professional family. And my grandfather was a very famous surgeon. He was the surgeon. I think he was the father of surgery in Ceylon, as Sri Lanka was then called. And his eldest son, Professor Milroy Paul, became the first professor of surgery in the university, and was very active in the Second World War when he used to be flown by the RAF to Burma, to the Burma front, to operate on wounded Allied soldiers. And my father, in his turn, became a pioneer cardiothoracic surgeon. But I won't go on. It's
So it sounds like you were destined to go to the Royal College. It was in your DNA.
That's right. Yes, we had a long association with the school to which my father and his brothers had all attended.
So it was a tradition. So what were you ambitious? I mean, given all your history and all your
yes, I mean,
fame.
I sort of slipped into it like a kind of
glove,
well-worn yes. shoe. And as I was saying before we started the program, I used to be operating on my teddy bears from an early age. So I'd always wanted to be a surgeon.
So you knew from the start that you wanted to specialize in surgery?
That's right. And with my father being a pioneer in this up-and-coming field of cardiothoracic surgery.
Was it quite, I mean, those were fairly, not early days, but I mean, it's certainly not like it is now. I mean, how old were you by the time you actually started operating?
You mean as a professional surgeon?
Yes, yes.
Well, actually qualified late because I may come to that later on, because I had to go to four medical schools. I started off in Cambridge at Trinity College. And because of the foreign exchange issues, I went back to Ceylon, and I was sent up to the second medical school, which is up in Kandy, Peradeniya, which is actually a residential university, which is on the lines of Cambridge, you know. And I spent 6 months there. Unfortunately, we had an insurgency by the JVP, who are now likely to form the next government with elections around the corner. And the university is closed down. So I then moved to Colombo, where I was much happier because I lived there and my school friends were all there. And had, of course, more facilities. You know, there was neurosurgery, and cardiothoracic surgery and so on, which I enjoyed.
And yes. Throughout this time, was your faith strong? Or I mean, it sounds like,
well,
your life
I think,
was
I think
pretty
think,
hectic.
As I told you, Di, at the beginning of this of the show, that I was actually a dutiful child. So whatever was told to me, I tended to follow.
Right.
So that would explain why I was strong in my faith. Because sure. It's because of my mother's faith that I happened to be a Catholic, and I just... What she gave me, I stayed with it.
Mm-hmm.
And equally from my father and his family, you know, the commitment to professionalism and the medical profession in particular and so on. I never questioned these things. I was that type of... I wasn't a revolutionary. Though I did, when I came to the UK in the swinging 60s, did take part in some demonstrations against apartheid. I was dragged into it by a school friend.
Well, not a bad thing to do. So we're up to your first piece of music. Can you introduce it for us? Can you tell us why this is important to you?
Yes, this is by my favourite saint, John Henry Newman, whose book I brought in, his Apologia.
Yes, I've got it in front of me right now.
By my bedside. And this is the poem that we... A poem which is now a hymn, which he wrote when he was deciding to become a Catholic, and he was in the Straits of Messina, I think, in a boat. There were big calm there, and he was troubled about whether he should leave his Anglican faith to join the Catholic Church. His mind was leading him to Rome, but his heart was with the Anglican Church, and he wrote this beautiful poem, which I've always loved, and we play it for you now.
Let's hear it. That was Lead, Kindly Light, performed by the Choir of Wells Cathedral and written by John Henry Newman, who has had a great influence in your life, Surendra, I think. I mean, I've got the book here, that your very book written by him, The Apologia Pro Vita Sua.
That's right. That's Newman's spiritual autobiography. And I came across it when I was a student at Trinity College, Cambridge, in the summer of 68. A Protestant friend of mine, took me to the Keswick Convention.
The Keswick Convention?
Yes, and under canvas. But at the end of the week, I was a bit... I wanted to go to Mass, and I thought, where in this Protestant country am I going to find a Catholic church? And I walked down the high street, and there was an Irish newspaper seller. And I thought to myself, if anyone knows where there's a church, it'll be this Irishman. So he said, yes, the church is just there. There's a wonderful rose garden.
I know the church. It's Our Lady of the Lake or something.
That's right. It's a long time ago. It's the summer of 68.
Yes.
And I went in, had Mass, and when I came out, there was this book, The Apologia.
Oh.
And I immediately bought a copy of that. And I was so thrilled with it that I read it out, excerpts of it, to my friends in the evening.
And so you've obviously had this by your side for many, many years.
That's right, yes. This book is not the book that I bought, which is now gone missing, but it's a subsequent edition.
So why was he so important to you? I mean, I know he was a very important influence to many.
As you know,
he
was recently canonized, and I really was very keen to go to the canonization. I had a chance because somebody invited me to give a talk on a medical topic, but I didn't take it up, unfortunately, as I could have made the canonization. He was a wonderful man. He was he lived a long time, and he was a great scholar. A very religious person, he first started off as an evangelical, then became an Anglican when he went to Oxford, went to Oriel College, Oxford, and got a fellowship there, and became part of the Oxford movement with Keble and Pusey and others. And that was a big movement, looking at the roots of the Anglican Church, to its Catholic roots. Newman actually followed it right through logically, and he felt that if the Anglican Church had Catholic roots, then that must take us to the Catholic Church ultimately. So that's what he did, and that hymn that you heard just now, "Lead Kindly Light," was when he was in the doldrums, the spiritual doldrums, and he was wondering what to do, whether to stay in the Anglican Church where his heart was, or to follow his head and joined the Catholic Church. And as you know, he did that and had a wonderful career, though a checkered career, in the Catholic Church, ending up as a cardinal. And I'm very glad that in my lifetime, I've seen him being canonized, becoming a saint, So he is really an intellectual saint, a great scholar, and appealed to my sort of cast of mind.
Amazing, amazing influence on the church. So, right, you're now at the stage in your life where you're working, you're a house surgeon in Plymouth General Hospital. So you're establishing your career. Was this quite a busy, busy time?
Yes, because when you're a student, I think you really learn medicine when you've qualified, not as a student. And yes, I became very busy, and my wife Rose, tells me that I completely neglected her. when I became
it's a common cry.
A house doctor.
Yes, doctor's wife suffer.
And I must apologize to her for that.
So, how old were you when, not how old were you, but where were you when you married Rose?
Yes, I married Rose. Her father was a doctor himself, and I married her before I, just as I qualified as a doctor, because I noticed how lonely the junior doctors were, particularly the foreigners. I decided that I would like to get married at that point. And I think that was a good decision that I made. But I think it was Rose who suffered the most for it. So I spent 6 years in that, in very, very busy jobs, because I wanted to become a surgeon. And at that time, you had to get the fellowship of the Royal College of Surgeons, the FRCS, which has been with us for now about 200 years.
And how long did that take to get that fellowship?
Well, you could do it in 4 years, but eventually I did it in 5 years, just for purely technical reasons. I wasn't able to do it within the 4 years, but I did it in 5 years. And I went up to Edinburgh, where I was very well treated and very well received, and passed both parts of this testing exam at the first shot. Asked some rather testing questions.
But Edinburgh,
great memories of the Scots.
Oh, I'm sure you do. But Edinburgh is a great tradition for surgery.
That's right. Yes, my grandfather, who has the same initials as myself, Dr. S.C. Paul, Dr. Samuel Chelaya Paul, was the first Ceylonese to become an FRCS England. He was a straight A student. He went to Madras University and was like first of the first, won the gold medal, the Johnston gold medal, which I still have with me. And then he married Dr. Asarappa, who himself was an outstanding person in that he was the first Ceylonese to have been educated in medicine and become an MD of Edinburgh. So that was his father-in-law. Dr. Asarappa, according to family folklore, knew Joseph Lister,
goodness,
the father of antiseptic surgery, yeah, and James Simpson, who introduced chloroform into obstetric practice. And when Lister moved to back to London, to King's College Hospital, that's where our association with this hospital took place, which started with my grandfather. And then eventually my uncle, Professor Milroy Paul, went and had his full education there in medicine. And my father followed after the Second World War. He was the youngest of 9 children did his postgraduate studies for the FRCS and then subsequently trained in thoracic surgery. Just after the Second World War, when there were big strides being made in that field.
Exactly. But then you moved to Great Ormond Street. That's
yes. The reason for that was, it's again connected with cardiothoracic surgery. I actually worked in the thoracic unit. So my viewers can understand what's going on. Mm. Nowadays, it's called cardiothoracic surgery, but the original name for cardiothoracic surgery was thoracic surgery. And even in my time at Great Ormond Street, the thoracic unit was called the thoracic unit, where they did cardiac surgery. So I wanted to get a good exposure to the whole field of cardiothoracic surgery, which I eventually did. I started off by doing thoracic surgery, pure thoracic surgery in Bristol at the Frenchy Hospital. And then subsequently, I moved to Great Ormond Street. I was lucky to get that on my second time round, become a house surgeon there in the thoracic unit, and saw a lot of pediatric cardiac surgery, which I greatly enjoyed, but it was very, very stressful and tiring.
I'm sure it was.
And then I moved on to Southampton, where they were doing a mixture of both children and adults cardiac surgery. And then finally, I completed my training by doing a month with Sir Terence English just after he started doing heart transplants in humans. And we, in fact, did the 13th transplant during my month with him. So I had a very good exposure to cardiothoracic surgery, all facets of it, before I moved back to Ceylon, or it had now become Sri Lanka after 1972.
Can I ask what was it like working with Sir Terence English? I mean, wasn't it a bit awesome?
No, he was a very nice man. He was a very approachable, a very intense person. He was a very nice man, a very caring man, and he and Mr. Milstein was the other surgeon. They were great.
Must have been wonderful.
I have great respect for them.
Must have been wonderful being on their team.
Yes, it was, yes.
But demanding.
Yes, but I expected that. My father was a demanding person. I grew up in a demanding household.
You wouldn't expect less. So we're up to your second choice of music. Can you tell us about this and why you chose it?
Yes. Now, I've chosen the Ave Maria. And as you know, there are several versions of this. The reason I chose it is that I happened to be on the first pilgrimage done by Fisher House.
Oh, really?
To Lourdes. That was way back in 69, if I recall. The summer of 69. That's when we went to Lourdes. And it was a wonderful time. We went with Father Alan Keenan. I think he was a Franciscan. He was the assistant chaplain at Fisher House. And we went in a minibus. We drove right down to Lourdes. And in fact, I had gone ahead with some friends to Paris and then came back by train and joined the minibus, and we drove down. And it was a wonderful time. It was a time when the French military were finishing their pilgrimage, and they were returning to cast their vote. It was election time in France, and the international military went on pilgrimage subsequently, and we had lots of wonderful memories from that time.
So let's hear the Ave Maria. Catherine Jenkins singing Ave Maria. Sarant, tell us about your experiences in Lourdes. You've already told me that Our Lady is your favourite person, but it sounds like you have a very strong connection, especially when you're in Lourdes.
Yes, that's right. I've been to Lourdes three times. The first time was with my parents when I was a young child. And the second time was when I was at in the University of Cambridge, and through Fisher House, we went on the very first pilgrimage, I believe, to Lourdes. And this was way back in the late 60s when you go to the baths, they actually toss you into the baths, and it's icy cold water. So in my case, I told the helpers I will get into the bath on my own. And when I did get into the water lost its temperature. It had all the other qualities of being water, of a fluid, but it didn't have temperature. And I was really astonished and very grateful to St. Bernadette because she had seen my predicament. And the very last time was...
Was the water... The water became warm, from icy cold to warm?
No, it just... It was neither hot nor cold. It just lost that, as a scientist, I would say, it lost...
Its temperature.
Temperature. Right. But it remained a fluid, mm-hmm, and so mm-hmm. forth. It is a fluid in all other respects, except temperature.
Amazing.
Yes, and I was... You know, we had to say a little prayer to St. Bernadette in those days, and I felt she was... instrumental in this. So I have a special devotion to St. Bernadette and of course to Our Lady. And last year I was fortunate to visit Lourdes once again with my wife and daughter and her young family. And I was just recovering from an injury to my shoulder when a stool that I was sitting on had suddenly collapsed under my weight. And I was in severe pain for about 9 months. I couldn't lie on that side. And we went to Lourdes really like, more like tourists, I'm afraid to say. But I decided to go on the, what's called the Eucharistic procession, because one of three places I remember where sort of miracles take place is when you're in the Eucharistic procession. And though I was in the Eucharistic procession just for a short time, the following day, I found that the pain in my shoulder, about 80-90%, had disappeared. And now, of course, it's completely disappeared, having returned from Sri Lanka after a short holiday with the warm weather.
That's incredible. Mm. Absolutely incredible. You're obviously very, very favoured.
Thank you. Thanks.
So, just to remind our listeners, our music choices this morning have been chosen by Surendra Paul. Dr. Surendra Paul from Sri Lanka, who lives in Cambridgeshire and is a very important part of our Radio Maria volunteers team. So can you, just for anybody who might be even thinking about volunteering for Radio Maria, can you say how much hard work it is, how much you get out of it, why you want to do it? Does it work?
Well, I'm very happy to be associated with this radio station because it commemorates Our Lady, and I would do anything for her. And I'd say that you get a lot out of it. It's not really hard work, except on some occasions like this this interview. But otherwise, it's very enjoyable. And come in and give them a call they need all sorts of people.
What do you do in particular?
I don't do a lot except join in, engage with some of the activities. I'd like to do some of the technical side, but I'm afraid, you know, maybe I'm
Oh, I'm sure you're not. It. I'm sure you're not. You're a surgeon, for crying out loud. I'm sure you're a dab hand. But anyway, if anybody would... out there would be interested in doing what Saran is doing, I'm doing, other people are doing, you can call the Radio Maria line, which will be I'll give you at the end of the program. So back to Colombo, the last point we talked about was you were going to return to Colombo, but then things didn't quite work out. Your land was taken from you. Am I galloping forward a bit?
Yes, let me explain. I always wanted to go back because we have a legacy in that country, and our family has been associated with medicine and surgery in Ceylon, which is now Sri Lanka. So I'd always wanted to go back and carry on as a surgeon. But then when my family grew up, I think I sold them studying in Cambridge too well. And they were both keen to come over to the UK. So my son preceded my daughter. And when it came to my daughter's coming over to the UK for her higher studies, because of the high costs that's been levied for international students,
oh, yeah, yeah,
I decided to come over and work which I did at Inching Brook Hospital, where I had previously worked as a locum and had really enjoyed it. Fortunately, we were outside the political events, though we are regarded as a Tamil family, but we are not political. My grandfather, Dr. S. C. Paul, when he retired from government service, did try to contest the state council elections as an independent candidate, but unfortunately for him, unfortunately for us, he was not elected, though he tried twice, and it resulted in all his property being mortgaged to the hilt in order to do so.
No.
More recently, unfortunately, we have a property up in Jaffna where my Dr. S. C. Paul's wife was a severe asthmatic. And between the two world wars, there was no effective Western medicine for the treatment of asthma. It's still a problem nowadays. And he bought this property because it was the only part in the whole island where she was well. It has a sort of microclimate, and also it is has got some mythological and historical significance in that it actually is the Hindu Ludes, which the Hindus regard as
Their
Ludes. And there is a bathing area for the public 1 mile from my home in the village of Kirimala. This is up on the north coast of Jaffna. And it's a beautiful location because from our house, which is the only high point, you can actually see the sunrise and sunset. And during the Second World War, it was used by the RAF as a direction finding station for the US bombers that used to fly from Palali Airfield, this is the airport for Jaffna, to the Burma front to bomb the Japanese.
Amazing. Absolutely extraordinary. We are actually up to your third choice of music, which now is Edelweiss. Will you explain why this is your choice?
Yes, I've always been taken up by this musical, the Sound of Music, and I like the family, and I enjoy, of course, like everybody else, I enjoy the music so very, very much, and it makes me very nostalgic. Mm-hmm. So that's why I've chosen Edelweiss.
Thank you. Edelweiss from The Sound of Music. Tell me, Surendra, about your work. Now we're moving swiftly on, because you are a great traveller, to the Falklands and Oman. What were you doing there?
Yes, I did. Well, they turned out to be temporary jobs. The one in Falklands was going to be a temporary job because of its isolation. And the one in Oman was going to be a bit longer, but it folded for various reasons. And there were wonderful opportunities, because Oman, I did that first when I was and Falklands subsequently. And they gave me two different perspectives, one being out in the desert and the other one just about 700 miles from the Antarctic, from Antarctica. I did my first cesarean section, being a general and thoracic surgeon. I did my first cesarean section out in the Falklands, and which is a crash cesarean section. The mother was a lawyer who worked for the Attorney General's Department, and she stubbornly refused to have an elective section done by an obstetrician who would be flown out from the UK. So it fell to me to do an emergency section when she got into difficulty. She was a short stature. And fortunately, it went very well. And I understand the parents took him out to one of the concerts as a baby, and he was able to enjoy the concert to the full.
But so when you say you say it quite calmly, you did your first cesarean section. I suppose if you've opened up hearts and readjusted chests, you know, a cesarean is a piece of cake, but it's still...
I was warned that I may have to do a what is called an emergency or crash cesarean section, because for the elective sections, they collect them all and get someone down from the UK to do it. And then, of course, I got one of my colleagues in the hospital back in Sri Lanka to take an obstetrician to take me through a cesarean section. And at the end of it, he said, the rest is surgical technique. And you know all about it.
Well, yes, and you probably do. How long were you at Hinchinbrook?
Oh, I've known Hinchinbrook for several years. It's my cousin, who is now deceased, who also incidentally trained at King's College Hospital as a medical student and lived in well into his 80s, was also a bachelor, unfortunately. First discovered this hospital when it has been set up. It succeeded the Hunts County Hospital, which had been there for probably a couple of centuries earlier. And this is in time of John Major, and he was when this hospital was opened by the Duke of Gloucester, if I remember right. I subsequently heard about it, and I immediately picked up my ears, and I thought, that's interesting. It's close to Cambridge. And I got involved with it, and I enjoyed my time there. I used to come over every few years in summertime with my family and do a locum. And they just had three surgeons at the time, two general surgeons and one urologist.
Only three surgeons at Hinchinbrook?
And we did everything, adults and children and trauma and you name it, everything that came through the door, literally.
No wonder Rose said you didn't get much of your time. You must have been working an 18-hour day.
So when I gave up my post with great heartbreak in Sri Lanka, because I wanted to go on, I hadn't quite reached the retirement age, came back to Hinchinbrook Hospital, where they had set up a post for me in a step-down role, which I did, but I didn't enjoy it as much as I did the first time round, because then I was working as a consultant and didn't quite enjoy being an understudy. But it was very educational, and also what I enjoyed most was teaching medical students from the Cambridge Clinical School.
So did they come to you, or did you teach in the clinical school?
No, they came to us in the hospital, and I, you know, enjoyed that. And I still continue with that now that I've retired. I'm involved with the Department of Physiology, Development and Neuroscience, PDN, teaching the preclinical medical students, which I enjoy very much. And I'm hoping to return to that activity in the next couple of weeks.
Is that you come into Cambridge to do that?
Yes, I do. Yes. And I teach on cadavers. These are preserved dead bodies. And it's a way of the curriculum has changed from the time that I learned my anatomy as well in Cambridge, but it was dry as dust, such a boring subject. But now the General Medical Council has intervened and has made it more interesting, in that they want the anatomy related to clinical. What we do in the hospital. So that's a lot more interesting. And that's what I enjoy putting, you know, my input, my from 40 years, 40 plus years experience in bringing that to the students.
Do you ever have any students faint on you?
Yes, one or two, not because of my activities, but in the dissecting room as a whole. Yes, we are asked to look out for that, and I'm
sure you do.
Yes.
We're up to your fourth choice, the Beatles, Here Comes the Sun. Does it remind you of home?
Well, it reminds me of the 60s, because I grew up in the 60s, and I was actually a student in Cambridge in the swinging 60s. It was that period of 67 to 1970. This was the music. I remember at first, a friend played some of the tracks from the Beatles in the early 60s. It didn't appeal to me. It wasn't very musical. But when I came to Cambridge and Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band and Yellow Submarine and all these sort of things were playing.
This is a very joyful song.
Yes, that's right.
Here comes the sun. All right.
Here Comes the Sun by the Beatles. Fabulous piece. So before we reach the 11 o'clock, we could talk for hours, you know. There's so much. You've had such a wonderful life, fascinating life. You set up the Leonard Wolf Society. When did you have time to do that, and where and how?
Well, I owe this to a deceased friend of mine, who was much older than me, Mr. Nath Sivasambu, who was came over to the UK in the 50s to complete his studies in philosophy, which he'd started studying at the University of Peradeniya. And he was very much into Leonard Woolf. My first association with Leonard Woolf was reading some excerpts of from his book, The Village in the Jungle, which is about Leonard's time as a civil servant, his 7 years that he spent in Ceylon. And it's a wonderful read. It's a short read. It's beautifully written. And I think it's much better, I might be biased, than his wife, Virginia Woolf's novels. But then I'm biased. I owe some of my success in getting a place at Trinity, I think, to Leonard Woolf, because my tutors, the late Dr. Robson, who was a historian, and Professor Patrick Merton, who was a physiologist, were both reading these books and were influenced a lot by Leonard Woolf's autobiography, and especially all his references to Ceylon, where he was so highly taken up. And he said that he was embarrassed by the fact that the British were there and that we had been colonized, because he felt that with our 2,500-year-old history, written history, that we should be really running ourselves, and felt very embarrassed by that. As you know, Leonard Woolf, he was an anti-imperialist when he came back to the UK after 7 years. He didn't want to continue because he knew he might end up as a governor, and he didn't want to be a part of the imperialist setup. He joined the Fabian Society, the Labour Party. He became International Secretary of the Labour Party. And it's believed in some quarters that the decolonization movement also owes its origins to Leonard Woolf and his anti-imperialistic sentiments and his experiences in Ceylon at the time.
Extraordinary, extraordinary. It's wonderful. Well, we're up to your final piece of music, which is rather beautiful. It's sung by the Poor Clare Nuns at Arundel. This is very special to you, I think, Surendra.
Yes, I saw this on the on national TV, and they had these nuns who just brought out this album, which you're going to hear a track from, and they were photographed at Abbey Road. They made it at Abbey Road where the Beatles were, and I thought we should end with that.
It's a perfect ending. Thank you so much for sharing all your memories with you and sharing your music with us this morning. And thank you to all our listeners out there.